And here we are.
This means all the inappropriate things I say from now on will be deliberate.
Yes. So welcome to A Simple Communion Story of Arcod's A Marriage of Serpents, Episode 4. A Marriage of Serpents is a story of a small group of Aurr, or heroes, in the southern kingdom of Tuhal, a decade after the God's Fall War in the northern kingdoms of Faerisha and Tirnan, where, by and large, the gods were lured, tricked, or trapped, or summoned unwillingly onto the battlefield over a handful of months, and subsequently perished at each other's hands and the hands of some rather interestingly equipped mere mortals. The resultant crash of civilization has recovered most quickly in the southern kingdom of Tuhal, which is the sister kingdom of the northern kingdom of Cahal, which is known as the kingdom of secrets or the kingdom of magic. Tuhal is known as the kingdom of the law. The main law being, thou shalt not use magic. Perhaps ironically enough. Unless you're bonded to the state, or unless you're very wealthy. Joining us for tonight, I'm Paul Stafford, I'm the storyteller, or MC, as they're called, in the City of Mist system, which we use now. And I'm joined by my three most excellent players, who will introduce themselves and their characters briefly.
Hello, I'm Dale, and I'm going to be playing Clayborn, about whom you can run and run as fast as you can. You can't catch him. He's a gingerbread man.
My name is... What was that, Paul?
Nothing.
Okay. My name is Matthew Melville, and I play the characters Cecile and Sisyphus. The family Surin on a quest to save their homeland.
My name is John Schiavone. I'm playing Kian Gallagher, who is a exiled or bonded Dree. He's previously an agent working for the rival kingdom Cahal, but now is bonded to one of
sister kingdom.
Sister Kingdom of Cahal, and definitely not rivals in any way, and is currently bonded to a noble house of Vane in Tuhal.
Excellent. Welcome to episode 4, which is a continuation of episode 3, represented by this card, the Child. In episode 3, the heroes continued their investigations of the Proving Grounds, which is a place of gladiatorial combat out at the edge of the city of Cair-Cuval, the capital here in Tuhal. And they witnessed their magics, particularly the magics of Cecil, Sisyphus, and Kian, take life in complementary ways, or take life in opposition to each other's magics, and move somewhat beyond their control. And so, for example, Kian, when he was using the Way of the Voice and the Serpent's Breath to investigate the water that is stored in the cisterns under the under the Proving Grounds, the Serpent's Breath got away from him and took life and drew, and he spoke with a voice, a booming voice that was perhaps the serpent's, a version of the serpent's voice, that said, all of this is mine and does not belong to you. And a serpent of water formed from the water cascading out from underground and grabbed him in a serpentine grip as it then began to rain upward in a torrent out of the ground, up into the sky, which and did not fall again. Oh, and Kian, as he spoke, was seen wearing a sort of adamantine crown made of water. Meanwhile, Cecile and Sisyphus went spelunking underground and found in a toxic charnel pit what could only be the remains of what was later confirmed to be one of the three missing heroes named Bin O'Dare. And they found a silver bracelet that was, if anything, cleaned by its time in the toxic, lye-infested charnel pits beneath the Proving Grounds. And what they learned from a combination of the touched caretaker of the Proving Grounds, Chauriga, and the cook caretaker, a pantry named, you don't know his name, he's called Rat. Being scraggly, bedraggled, and missing an ear, and having some patchy fur problems, does perhaps not dissemble, resemble a rat. Not disresemble? One of those. Mm-hmm. They confirmed that was in fact a bracelet worn by Bin O'Dare, and they learned subsequently that it was a coming of age bracelet common to his clan, and they're the kind that are affixed and cannot be removed. Leaving those who went missing in the whatever happened on opening day, connected to the shadow of Knotwork that Kian revealed, right?
Yeah. No. Wasn't it Claiborne who revealed it?
Was it?
Are you talking about on the millstone, or are you talking about
The knotwork in the soot down in the
hall? Oh, yeah. Yes, that was Kian.
Yeah. The other things or people that went missing were two spinners that are the spider people, mm-hmm. and two heroes, both of the Lu clan, one named Donal, who has a wife in the old market section of Kirkival, and the other, Bandon Olu, who has his family in the Clearwater district of Kirkival. Taking their leave of that place, they went into the New Market area and asked around after the design that they had hastily sketched from the soot of the hallway below the Proving Grounds, and to no avail. But later that evening, the street urchins that Claiborne apparently has befriended and that he sent off looking for the design came back and said that they had in fact found the design, and that it was in the what are those things called? In the ring fort that surrounds the crown at the center of the city. The ring fort being an ancient fortification, quite large in this case, the largest known in Maurer, and it's divided into sections. We saw one section of it, the old wood, in episode one, and in a section known as the park or the pond. The next morning, they went to examine what the children had reported. And it was a massive millstone, complete with hole in the center and everything, laying in the shallow water of the great kind of leaf-shaped pond. And in it, there was a sort of an air folly. There was a gold, a brass or gold sort of windmobile made of complex leaves that turned slowly and spun as the breezes took it and touched it. And upon some magical examination, Kian exclaimed loudly and staggered back away from the water to, probably much too loudly, tell his compatriots. And John, what did you say to them?
Actually, I forgot what specifically.
So I'll slack you. So it's in. You can re-exclaim. It's in our one-to-one Slack.
Oh.
We don't get any support for Slack. We just use Slack's generous free stuff to do communication and kind of the history and communication around the game. Thanks, Slack.
Thank you.
Slack.
Oh, in our one-to-one, I don't know if I actually, did I say that out loud?
Well, yeah. You are now.
Okay. I think what I said was that it was a representation of the god Turner, the spinner of prophecy. That's what you're referring to?
Sure, but hang on.
Right. This is the millstone that Turner used in the time of the High Kings to trap the terrors of Mar beneath the earth. And it could not remain where it was under the earth, lest terror escape. I think he specifically heard that it was the capstone for terror.
Yeah. So, too loudly and with a little bit of a disconnected drone in his voice, Kian staggers back from the water and says that as though to a classroom of disinterested students. As he speaks those words, Cecile, a shiver runs up your spine. And if you had hair, you're certain it's what your mammal friends would describe as hair raising. Mm. Sisyphus notices and directs your attention to the fact that as he finishes speaking, like echoes of his words, there are ripples run out across the water away from you. And they're visibly emanating from his position.
Okay. Can I get any more information from the Earth Speaks? Can I kind of tap into the, try and focus?
You could certainly try.
All right.
So you do know from past experience that you calling on the dragon after he has called on the serpent or vice versa can have exciting results.
Yes, so let's do exciting.
Okay.
And we want that.
I just
under general.
So hang on a second. So tell us what you're doing and then tell us what tags apply.
Okay. I think there's only really one tag, and that's the Earth Speaks. Okay. It gives me a better sense of like the history and kind of it's might be a little less effective here, but it's a little bit more general than say John's power, because it gives me sort of a longer term view. I can kind of tell if there's been changes and kind of the overlapping like feeling of a place, if it's kind of gone up and down. So it's less on specifics and a little bit more on longer term, like how it's feeling versus how it's felt in the past. And I think that's really the only tag that I think works for this.
Okay. So I just want to let you know there are two scene tags still in operation, or there are two scene tags in operation. One is bad news,
okay,
which doesn't apply to this.
Okay.
But the other is Serpent's Touch 3. So it's Serpent's Touch, and it's level 3.
Okay. In that case,
meaning the serpent's power is strong here at the moment.
Okay.
This seems like a time to use a hurt, since I have one towards Cecile. I mean, it just seems thematically appropriate.
Okay.
Okay, because that's true. Because if the serpent is still strong, then there's another tag, but it's a weakness tag.
I mean, mechanically, if you beat it,
susceptible to the serpent.
Yeah, mechanically, if you beat it, it'll be good for you. I do have a question, though, Paul, because at the end of the last session, you also described that we were under attack, and I assume, is that...
Right, that's what I remember as
well. Is
that
still happening, or is that...
Oh, what did I say?
You I said remember. That two eel heads filled with those attacked.
Yes, yes, yes. I was delaying that to give you a moment in case you wanted to do something else.
We can.
You know what? Maybe I'm gonna not do this action just on the beginning of combat.
Okay.
So I don't mess Cecile and Sisyphus up just before our conflict.
All right. So then, as you pause to collect yourselves, two eel heads rise up out of the water, made of the water itself, and hiss.
Right.
And Paul, what is the name of this episode? I'm going to post the notes.
So this is a continuation of episode 3, The Child.
Okay.
Excellent.
And then one person's character went out and is in the water. Who was that again? Do we?
I thought that was Claiborne. Am I wrong?
No, I went out in the water.
Okay, so Claiborne's out in the water. We're still on the land.
Yeah.
Okay.
Alrighty. Give me just 1 second. This page is not loading. Okay, well, it's apparently not going to load, so I don't have those notes. Alrighty, cool. Everybody give me is that what we're going to do? No, so the serpents form out of the water and hiss, kind of regarding the four of you. And what do you do?
I think Cecile is going to yell at Claiborne to run. Kind of thinking that Claiborne might do better on land, or at least the serpents will do poorer. being as they are manifestations of a god of water and the sea.
All right.
And then, is there anything nearby that Sisyphus could throw at these things?
There are stones in the water.
Like within easy grabbing distance, or like having to like go all the way out there to grab one?
I mean, he'd have to lean out over the water and grab up a stone, but he could.
Okay, he'll do that.
Okay. Otherwise, it's kind of like long, sculpted and maintained grass.
Right, right.
And maybe like over there, there's a bench, but.
Yep, he's going to grab one of these sacred stones and pick it up and then try and throw it at the serpents.
Alrighty.
Sure, that won't have collateral damage.
All right. And so you're just hucking a stone at one of the serpents.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That to me sounds like
talking about themes or
no, I'm looking at player moves.
Okay.
All right, so that sounds like a go toe-to-toe.
Uh-huh.
So what tags are you using?
I have contact with the earth, but I don't think that really applies. Because that's more about regeneration. And I think he's fine right now. So I don't honestly think any of my tags specifically apply to this.
Okay. Really?
I'm pretty sure they don't. Yeah.
Okay.
This isn't really how he's built to fight. He's more of an up close and personal, but he doesn't really want to get up close and personal yet. If he has to go in the water, he'd rather they come to him.
Okay.
There's an attack for him just being really strong.
I had not put that on. So.
Oh. Oh dear.
Yep.
So here's the problem.
Okay.
Damage is equal to the tags.
Mm.
Tap. So if you don't tap any tags, you can't hurt something.
Gotcha.
But
it's narrative. So he picks up a rock and he tries to throw it at the serpents. It's a 4. So the chance of him actually having hit anything kind of makes all that moot.
So okay.
There's just a giant splash as a rock goes way off center and just sort of lands in the pool and kind of splashes Claiborne and the serpents and everything else. Just... And then I think you get Cecile yelling once again, Claiborne, run for it!
The serpents face each other like two swans for a moment, making almost the image of a heart.
Aw.
Claiborne turns around and begins walking back toward the shore of this pond, lake.
Okay, so toward the serpents?
I thought
the serpents sort of formed. I thought you'd gone in to kind of look at the other side of the millstone and look around in the water.
I thought I pretty much just walked in and right up to the millstone.
Okay.
So I would be in front of it. Mm-hmm. And okay, I thought they came up on either side of it. So I am very close to them, but they're not between me and the shore.
Okay. So you're just gonna get out of the water.
I'm just gonna turn around and begin walking back toward the edge.
Yeah. Okay. Mosey back.
Yeah. It is a bit of a mosey.
John.
So I have a question. The serpent's touch level 3. What does level 3 mean?
So that means it's a level 3 effect.
Uh-huh.
So you have to do like 3 damage to it to get rid of it.
Oh, but I mean, if I want to use it, does that make it, I can use it, right?
I don't know. Can you?
I'm just saying, in general, this is a story tag that I can use, correct? If I can make it applicable.
Sure.
Okay, and the fact that it's level 3 just indicates like how difficult it would be to remove the tag. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Okay. I think Kian faces the serpents, and in that same almost disembodied kind of deadpan monotone voice that he kind of unearthed the discovery that the serpent had revealed to him earlier, there's a familiar tonality to it as it kind of gains an authority and a menace that is reminiscent of when he was kind of possessed by the cisterns at the Proving Grounds. And he says, this is not your place. This belongs to us. This belongs to me. And I'm going to use the voice to kind of gather the serpent against the eels. And I'm thinking of it not as kind of an attack yet, but I'm kind of like channeling what's available. Is that possible?
You're gathering the serpent against the eels, so... Mm-hmm. You're not trying to hurt them. You're not trying to convince them. Are you trying to like give them a tag, like force a tag up on them? Or?
Well, so the way I'm picturing is that I'm gathering kind of the energy of the water. We're in the water, of the waters around us. And then like, I'm going to smash the eels with the water, but it takes him time to kind of channel the energies. So it's not like, he's not going to just kind of do a splash attack now. He's kind of like preparing for the next step. So okay. I guess if tags are damage, it makes sense to me mechanically that he's like adding a tag to use on his next action.
So yeah. So what we'll do is we'll do a change the game.
Okay.
And you're gonna create a tag on yourself.
Okay.
That you can then spend.
All right.
Or you're basically going to create a juice to use next turn. So you're kind of powering up.
Right.
Is that okay? Great. Okay. And so what are the tags that you're using? I also want to let you guys know, and this has to accompany a really cool description, but one of the things you can do is burn a tag. So say you had a tag which was sharp sword. Mm. You could burn your sharp sword tag, and which means you can't use it for the rest of tonight. And it gives you a big wampa, but it does deprive you of that tag for the rest of the night.
Mm.
So if I burn my sharp sword tag, you know, I might, for example, having opened the door into a room where a witch is starting an evil spell, I might take the sword over my head and be like, you know, die infidel, and hurl it at her across the room, its edges flashing end over end, making runes in the air, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then either the sword's going to, you know, bury in the witch, or it's going to go past her into the fireplace, and I'm not going to be able to use it tonight. Does that kind of make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So if you really need something to succeed, you can burn a tag.
Is that different from hit with all you've got?
It is.
And what is hit with
all you got? Well, you can hit with all you got and burn a tag.
I see.
Hit with all you got is, I'm not trying to defend myself. I'm not trying to mitigate anything else that's happening. I just want to hurt you a lot.
Got it.
But the person either has to be sort of like beaten down a little bit, or you have to have a huge advantage over them, or you have to have surprise on them to hit them with all you've got. So you can't start a fight hitting them with all you got.
Cool.
You know, you could, for example, like you could maybe hit them with all you got if it's like an enemy you've been hunting and you were like investigating some random house and you knocked on the door and they opened the door and weren't expecting you coming. You could be like, punch him in the face as hard as I possibly can. That son of a bitch. So you could use it then. But
right.
But
if you use that attack and it succeeds and they just laugh, then it's like, oh, this is one of those ones where I'm not supposed to fight. This is one of those ones I'm supposed to run away.
Oh, I'm Worf in this situation. is what you conclude. If what I'm doing in terms of changing the game to give myself an advantage, is that something that would be a prelude to hit with all you've got?
It could be, sure, yeah.
Okay, cool.
It could also just be a prelude. What you typically do first is you'd go toe-to-toe. You'd just be like, I'm going to take you out.
Right. Yeah, no, and I think you're exactly right. Like, looking at the list, this is a change the game action, and the tags I would like to use are the voice, the serpent gathers, the land, or in this case, the water changes, and the serpent is patient. How many tags
can only use three.
And actually, I want to use the serpent's touch. So instead, I'll say the voice, the serpent gathers, and the serpent's touch are the three I'm using.
Okay. Great.
And I will roll that. So 2d6 plus 3. Nine.
Okay.
After you tell me what happens, I'm going to quickly jet out to use the restroom, but I'll be right back.
Yeah, so you get two juice for that. So you can give yourself a two tag that you can then burn next turn. And I'm going to say that consumes part of the serpent's touch. So I'm lowering it to two.
And to be clear, if I was using the serpent's touch like in a damage roll, it wouldn't add three to the damage. It would still just add one. Is that right?
Right. Yeah.
What's the name of
it? Because it's a status effect. It's a scene effect, a scene status. But if it's a status on you, you can use the whole thing.
Cool. And what's the name of the tag that I just gave to myself?
We'll call it Looming Serpent.
Ooh, I like it. All right. I'm going to use our Shemabio back. But go ahead.
All righty. Sisyphus, as you're telling Claiborne to run, you see one of the serpents kind of sort of rises up out of the water, and the other one just kind of falls away like rain, sort of spattering on the water surface. And the one that's risen up comes around in front of you, Claiborne. It's extremely swift, and so as you're sort of laboriously like, it rises up, and there's an uncanny amount of detail in all the teeth for water.
Okay.
And it sort of rises up and kind of at you with sort of like dripping, menacing, watery fangs with no end of drippy mucus in sight. And so I need you. And so I need you to somehow face danger around that.
Okay. I'm going to continue walking toward it and walk right into it.
Okay. And the idea being that its water will just sort of soak into you and part around you and.
Oh, I welcome it in. My idea here is that it's going to attack me or wrap itself around me, and I'm simply going to become a big wobbly humanoid of mud.
Okay, so it was kind of trying to scare you.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, and so it sounds like what you're doing, instead of facing danger, is what you're doing is you're trying to change the game. And you're trying to absorb its essence into yours.
Yes.
Does that sound right to you?
Yeah.
So you're probably going to end up draining some of its... So I'll just tell you, they have a tag called Body of Water.
Uh-huh.
And so you're going to try to drain its body of water.
Yes. And I'm thinking it would be appropriate for me to burn this tag of mine, which is pliable, because it's going to take me a little while to sort myself out, like the rest of the scene.
Okay. So you're just going to burn pliable.
Can I use my help?
To make it happen?
Yeah.
Can I use my help for
sure.
Claiborne?
Mark it off.
Yep.
All right. So I'm not going to look it up right now, but I think what burning a tag does is it gets you a dynamite. You know what? I actually am going to obsessively look it up. Just because I have all the books right here. Player's Guide. Master of Ceremonies, okay, yeah.
Yeah, actually, Paul, I think the name of the tag I'm burning is Moist.
Well, although Moist seems like something you'd burn to give up water.
Yeah.
Not to take on more water, because it's going to make you more moist, not less moist. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Sure.
I think your first instinct, pliable, makes a lot of sense to me.
Well, pliable is the whole, that's the whole card.
Oh, okay. So you need to pick one of the tags underneath.
Exactly. And I think yes. Okay. Moist is specifically about soaking things in and releasing things back out. So
okay.
I don't, he's going to be able to think. I mean, it's he's taking its water, but I imagine there's going to be some internal struggle. Because it might decide to take his shape,
or maybe he's taking too much water.
Oh, far too much. This thing is much bigger than he is. Okay. So I was thinking he just becomes this huge, blobby shape of humanoid mud. And Paul, I think various things he has hidden within might become more apparent during this. Which could have effects on the other players.
Alrighty, so give me just a straight roll then.
Okay.
And I'm going to adjudicate the bonuses.
Okay. So I should tell you that my weakness tags on that card mm-hmm. are well, one of them is scaffolding, and that may come to play here.
Yeah.
Thing like is, what he's about to be is much larger and wobblier than his internal structure. So,
ooh,
not good.
Oh dear. Did the help get factored in? I forget how the help works.
Yeah, no, it adds one. So okay.
Oh, that's a success then, barely. Oh, we didn't even include the tags. So that's not bad.
Well, no, yeah, you don't include tags when you burn a power tag.
Oh.
Hmm.
Okay. So you implacably, Claiborne, steps into the jagged face of the eel, and its warning was not of no account, and it lunges forward and fastens his face in its jaws, and the teeth sink terrifyingly into the flesh-like clay of his cheeks, and he walks forward, wrapping its scything and sinewing body in his hands or in his arms, and pulls it into him as the thrashing of it changes from the thrashing of a predator to break the prey's neck to the thrashing of prey trying to escape.
And if this were a regular human that it was biting on the head, you would see a bloom of blood around its teeth and bursting into its head and throat. But instead, there's a bloom of dark brown.
Tee-hee-hee. Let's wait for Matthew to be back. Claiborne's pace slackens slightly as the contest continues, and the creature disturbingly vanishes by parts into the clay body, but the durate form of the hero is not unaffected, and is and even as he pushes the biting jaws into his own face, his face seems to writhe from within, and he takes first the expression of mania as the water within continues to try to escape, but then his expression slackens like an idiot, and then slackens into a sort of demented old age, and then his whole body sort of expands and begins to drip and slump downward, and the last thrashings of the thing throw bits of hyper-saturated deep blood red clay in all directions, thoroughly splattering Sisyphus, Cecile, and Kian, although you'd be hard-pressed to point out the exact locations where Sisyphus had been splattered.
Mm-hmm. I'm here for a visit. Hi, guys.
And as he steps up onto the land with one last squelching swonk, the last of the eel drains out of his foot and much diminished, only now the size of a man's hand, it reemerges from the water and hisses at him, and the flesh of his, or the clay of his whole body, vibrates with the hiss. and then suddenly pieces of pure white begin to show through the clay and spots on his face and on the side of his head and on the kind of upper shoulder area.
Mm-hmm.
As you regard this in terror, the other eel, having fallen into the water, emerges in a clean diver, instead of carrying little air into the water, carrying little water into the air, and the massive form of it lashes out, obviously trying to grab Cecile off Sisyphus's shoulders.
Mm. Yeah.
Having spotted the brains behind the brawn. And so, how do you face, so you need to face danger.
Okay.
Cecilophus. What do you do?
So I think the tag "embrace the enemy" would be appropriate here.
Oh,
so first, as he, oh,
okay, what was that? Go ahead.
And we'll see how effective it is. To some extent, it might cut it off, or he might find that you just can't really hold water.
So tell us, this is presumably Sisyphus doing this.
Right.
He's so tell us what Sisyphus is doing.
I'd like to roll first, and then I would like to use that to inform what he does.
Well, so generally,
I'm kind of interested in how effective it is, depending on what he was kind of trying to do.
Right. Because, so you can narrate for us what you're doing, and basically what you do, pretty much the way the MC system works is, what you do succeeds. But then okay. The result of it is the thing in question.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, so what happens is the giant water eel comes straight towards him. And then he goes out and he kind of just grabs the water and kind of crushes it against his form. And if it was biological, he would essentially be like strangling this giant snake. Nice little reversal of roles there. but sort of taking it and then just sort of manhandling it and using his strength as a surin to sort of hold it tight and hold it fast.
All right. This is where things get weird.
Okay.
Oh dear.
Yay.
Because the eels have a power called water is unstoppable.
Mm.
And so if you take an action to stop them, they get to attack you first.
Okay.
Alrighty. So so you lean in to grab it. And as Sisyphus's slow arms close around its the shimmering scales of its watery body, the scales explode into many smaller eel faces and bite Sisyphus's face, neck, arms, and chest, slashing at him with adamantine teeth of water. So before we resolve the first face danger, we're going to resolve this face danger.
Gotcha.
So this is pretty much and pretty much the only so the tags you were going to use to stop it were Earth's embrace. Is that right?
Yes. Although I think in this case I could also use the first one was embrace
the
enemy.
So here's the thing: you can only use a tag once in a round. So you were okay. Tapping Earth's embrace in the first one, and that was the only tag.
Yeah.
Okay. So you can use anything but Earth's embrace to defend you from the serpents, from the many, many eels.
Oh, because I'm using that for the next round.
Yes.
That I'm about.
Well, you're using that for something that's about to happen.
Right.
So it's already kind of tapped. If you think about it that way. Did everybody understand that?
I think so.
Okay.
I guess I'm wondering if mechanically trying to stop it only provokes two attacks against yourself.
For this creature, yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think I have any other tags specifically, unless we want to throw the Heart of the Dragon, which is
Dale wasn't trying to. Okay. Dale wasn't trying to stop it, so that didn't activate that mm-hmm. special
got it.
Tag property. So, Heart of the Dragon?
I could see that, just that he won't back down. He can just sort of take it.
Yeah, he's tough. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's Heart of the I'll buy that. Okay.
So that's a 10 plus 1.
Nice.
Nice.
I know Mike.
Okay. So a sharp and strong, though the many small eel's teeth are, nonetheless, they are foiled by the rock and leatherine accretions on Sisyphus's chest and arms, and so bits of stone and pieces of kind of leathery flesh go flying in all directions mm-hmm. in a sort of horrid eruption, and just not minding any of it, Sisyphus continues the way the earth continues. Mm. Okay. And so now your first face danger, trying to stop it from grabbing.
Okay. And as part of that, can this be like a grapple move where he's attempting at least to just sort of grab it and.
Yeah, you are grabbing it.
Okay.
You have cool. grabbed it.
Do some
now
damage, help
everybody. Squeeze it or.
Hold it for everybody else. Yeah. Okay. So I think three tags are appropriate in this case. Is there an incentive to ever like hold off on a tag just for like later?
Well, I mean, you've just seen one.
Right.
Which is if you attack, then if you get attacked in the same round, you can't use any of the tags you used
right.
to attack with.
Right.
Which is a double down danger with hit with all you've got. Because mm-hmm. if you hit with all you got and you get attacked back, you don't get the face danger. You just take it.
Okay. We're going to do it anyway. It's more fun. So, yeah. But
this is just a face danger. So you've got your Earth's Embrace. Is that it?
Yeah. So so there's that. And then since he did some damage to the front.
It didn't actually.
Oh, hurt. It didn't really do any hurt. No. Okay. Then skip that one.
It chipped away a bunch of accretion, but to no.
Think of it as exfoliation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like those little fish.
Okay.
Not all he needs to do is moisturize. It's good.
You know what? Since there's no damage, I'm going to skip the other two. We're just going to do Embrace the Earth.
It's like a refreshing power scrub.
Yeah.
Right.
Actually, I genuinely imagine that Sisyphus is like, oh, I haven't been able to like scratch that itch in years.
Later. Will the eel come back?
So that's an 8.
All right.
Nice. Not bad.
So yeah, so I think it attacks, it doesn't go, and then he just sort of bear hugs it.
Okay, so you
kind of brings it in. Yeah.
And
if there's no resistance, I imagine he'd just kind of come and it would kind of like get cut off. So I'm not sure what that is.
So can I?
Yeah.
So you grasp the body of the eel and it sort of explodes against you. But it's coursing coruscant body is graspable. Mm. And Sisyphus squeezes down on it and a shower of thin multicolored water droplets like eel scales, freshly scaled from the body of an eel, go shimmering multicolored into the air. Although it slows the eel, there's little enough purchase on water. And so you slow it, but don't stop it. And so, Cecile, you were gonna take bitten one, and in the mouth of the beast two, and you can take one of those off. So you can take one of each, or you can reduce the two. By reducing the two to a one, or you can take off the bitten and be in the mouth of the beast, but unharmed.
But in the mouth of the beast, let's two. Take the. So I have the. Okay, so it's.
So two there's in the mouth of the beast two, okay. And there's bitten one.
So we're going to reduce in the mouth of the beast to one.
Okay, so it bites you and it has you just gripped. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you get in the mouth of the beast six, it swallows you.
Right.
And you're gone. So,
to be fair,
kind of how damage works.
I think it would be unhappy the next day, too. This would be really hard to pass.
No, it's biting Cecile.
Oh, Cecile.
Yes, it was going for Cecile.
That's right.
The brains
That's right.
The outfit.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So
we're going to do in the belly of the beast for two.
So you can only take one off. You got an imperfect defense.
Right, so we're going to take off the bitten.
Oh, okay. So it's got you in its mouth.
Yeah.
But you're not hurt by it.
And I think you hear like some screaming, but it's underwater. Aww. So it's like... Whoa, 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 whoa,
whoa. Okay. So then your current tags are toxic burns too and in the mouth of the beast too.
Yep, yeah. He's having a hard week. Well, hard day.
Okay. Let's see if anybody would like to see the status page. I'm putting it in resources now.
Excellent.
All right. So it firmly latches onto you, but Sisyphus has also sort of kind of got a hold of its body.
Mm-hmm. And slightly injured it. What's our Dree gonna do?
Is it? Is there initiative order in City of Mists, or is that just storyteller description?
No. So it's sort of like the way you do is you typically alternate sides. So you guys go, then I go, and you guys go, then I go.
Okay.
So you can leap into going first.
Dale, do you want to go or should I go?
Please go ahead. I think Claiborne has a lot on his mind right now.
The eels, I think I missed a little bit because I stepped away. Are they made of water?
They are.
What are they? Okay.
They're made of water.
And surrounding us, behind us on the shore, or behind me, Kian, on the shore, what was the layout? Were there other buildings, or was it pretty? Were we pretty alone? What's the earth like?
The earth is granite underneath. There's long, long, long years of like. Growing the grass and adding earth, and so there are these kind of verdant lawns surrounding the leaf of the water.
I see.
And there's a few trees, but not many because the ground is very solid rock. So there's some smaller bushes and trees, and there's a in the distance there's a couple of benches to sit and kind of gaze out across the water, and or to gaze up at the crown.
And last question: what was the actual mechanical effect of burning attack when you looked it up?
So it depends what you're doing with it, but what it does is it sets a minimum for your roll, and it can only, if you burn a tag, it's the only tag that can be used, but it gives you a power of 3.
I see.
So basically you can't fail.
Right.
If you burn a tag.
And power normally would be if you succeed the number of tags that you use in your actions.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So burning a tag is good to be very effective at something you can't normally do.
Right.
If you have a tag that can at all apply.
I think Kian, having been waiting and muttering the charm under his breath and kind of stifling the rising sense of anxiety and fear for his unexpectedly close to him emotionally, his companions. He tries to gather.
May I add to your effort?
Sure.
So struggling with anxiety and fear, you see Claiborne kind of shudder to a stop, and it's like the flesh is dripping off of him. Literally, and he turns and looks at you, and he has this sort of elongated, like, expression, and then the clay sloughs off entirely, and a human skull emerges from the clay, and you can see that there are runes carved in it, like a circlet, and the runes seem to be bleeding.
Oh my god.
For those of you who are listening, Paul's making faces that look a lot like the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark. So,
thank you.
Mm-hmm. But the serpent that's attacking Claiborne is now itty bitty, right? Is that right?
Yes, it's an eel. The diameter of your arm. Yes, instead of the diameter of your entire body. So sure, itty bitty, sure.
Relative, right. Everything is
relatively relative. Speaking, compared to the other one, which is more or less the size of Sisyphus.
Right, and yes. So I think gathering kind of the energy of the serpent, Kian tries to basically tear the eel apart from the inside, since it's made of water. And I think visually what happens is as the eel is sort of like biting onto Cecile, there's like another face of the serpent that comes out, the face that they remember latching onto his back at the Proving Grounds, it like growing out of the face, but not to eat Cecile, but to like burst out of the eel.
To burst free, perhaps.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And hopefully they'll just like split it completely open right all along its belly. And so for that, I'm going to use the voice, the serpent is patient and the serpent gathers.
Mm-hmm. Voice, the serpent is patient and the serpent gathers. Nice. All right.
Rolling it.
And you're also using your tag.
Yes. Oh, so I need to use that instead if I'm going to use that, right?
Yes.
What is the advantage of having another tag? I mean, is there any other advantage besides, like, if you already have?
You can use that tag in addition because it's an extra tag that you generated.
Oh.
So it's a way to wind up a wallop.
Cool. Yeah. Let's do that. So I'm going to add that tag. Okay. So it's plus
2d6 plus 4.
Awesome. Can I burn a tag that I've given myself? No, right? Or can I?
No. Okay. You can only burn innate tags.
Got it. 12. Fuck you, eel.
Alrighty, so so it sounds from your description like what you'd like to do is impose the status, which is to do damage, and to undo the status that they imposed on Cecile.
Yeah, well, I was hoping that if I did enough damage to kill it, it would automatically undo the thing on Cecile.
So, but with a 12, you get to pick two kind of effects.
Cool, okay.
So yeah. you do the damage, yay.
Yeah.
And then you could like block or dodge or whatever, but you could also remove an inflicted status. And it seems totally reasonable that you could remove the one.
Totally.
In the mouth of the beast. So
you can't double up on damage, correct?
No.
Yeah.
Okay. So the head of it kind of shivers as the back of its head forms the serpent's face with the serpent's seven pointed crown. And it open with an audible and terrifying screech. And its face opens the other way from the eel's face, and so the head and the upper body of the eel just explode in cloudy water. And as you're splashed with the water through magic, you feel the sting of the sea, the salt, the water that hits the three of you is seawater, salt water.
Even though this lake is clearly fresh water.
Even though this lake is the cleanest water, the right. Cleanest, purest, fresh, sweet water, as they would say. Mm-hmm. It kind of falls back in pieces. Many serpents, many eels forming out of the body, and as each of them tries to peel apart, the rip of the serpent consumes the pieces that have come undone, until only the central part from which everything else is broken sort of splashes back into the pond, and then quickly, like the other end of it, raises up with a tiny eel head. And from behind you, you hear Terea Kushnarik. And you feel a bristle of hot power kind of wash over you from behind. In response, the two eels turn and face each other again in that, well, that I can't make, in that sort of swan-like heart attitude, and then they lose their shape, falling into the pool, just as formless rain.
So I suppose we'll turn around and see who.
the first thing you see is a man with a long fire red curls of hair, holding a skin derrick in the air that's burning like red hot iron, and there's a series of sigils burning in the air in front of him, and he's pressing the skin derrick into the bottom of the last one. And this seems like a good place to take a small break.
Okay.
So think about the state that you're in and what's up, and we'll come back in like, say, 3 minutes.
Sounds great.
All right.
See you guys soon.
All right. You turn to face the source of the sound and see characters burning in the air, obviously just carved by a man with the red blade of one of the Derigrua, one of the red blades of the mage hunters. It's not hard to imagine, Kian, just at a guess, that He's pointing the tip as he's raising his elbow to shove the blade into the characters he just carved in the air. He's pointing it at you.
Yeah. That is the least surprising bit of that information.
Yes. Claiborne, you've gained a lot of weight, and now you're starting to lose it.
Right.
And you're sort of like, you're having a little bit of problem, like, even though the internal structure is still there, it's sort of like losing its relationship to the
Yeah.
So go ahead.
Basically, I stagger when I reach the solid ground. I stagger, turn about, face back toward the lake, and slump into a sitting position. Okay. And begin to weep. Yeah.
Okay. His skin, Derek, is a presumably bronze-based blade, about forearm length, shaped like a leaf. It's a very sort of common shape for a blade, for a short blade.
Okay.
But it must be old, because none of the bronze is visible. And it's just that kind of sort of gem-like red crusting that often is just on the blade of a Skiandereg, but this is the whole blade.
Does that mean it's been used a lot?
Probably.
So is that like a crust that like forms as it like reacts to magic or whatever?
You don't know.
Okay.
This whole
human stuff.
Yeah. That's a human thing. That's
right. So,
and yeah. A fairly disturbed one at that.
Right.
I think I kind of with a worried look towards Claiborne, I reach inside my cloak and I pull out like a brooch, a seagull shaped brooch. I am bonded to House Fane, and they are bonded to me.
What in the name of all that was once holy is going on here? He says, kind of. He's sort of stopped the. There's obviously like a physical force that's required to keep the word burning in the air, and he's sort of easing. He's kind of eased back on it, and the sort of livid, drippy burning of it kind of eases back, and so it's almost like a fading neon. Character is sort of burned in the air.
So I think Sisyphus sees kind of the stone that was thrown into the middle of the water and is sort of jutting a little bit. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of cradling Cecile in his arm. And then he just sort of steps over two steps so that he's blocking view of the throne stone.
Just casually.
Yeah. Nothing behind me.
and what is your name besides?
I'm Cian Gallagher. My skin is Dri Aoife.
So you're trying to talk him down.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have you make a convince check.
Cool.
And so what tags are you using? And I recommend against picking any from your heroic pillars.
Yeah. I'm going to use the voice because I want to convince him. No.
And then, although you won't have time to tell them what he just wrote in the air, you'll certainly show them.
I'm going to use political influence of House Fane, likable, and
Although it doesn't look anything like this. This is what he wrote in the air. And I realize it looks like an unfortunate English word.
I forget if political influence and House Fane are two different tags or one tag.
It's not my character.
I think those are two different tags because the question was what benefit you have and who do you serve under a mission.
That sounds right.
Okay. So that's three tags. Political influence, House Fane, and like.
Oh, and you took an extra weakness in that to have the four power tags?
Yeah. Yes, because I have two weaknesses. One is the geese of the mage hunters on me, and the enmity from the mage hunters because of the family that I serve.
Yeah.
Which sounds appropriate if you wanted to screw me over.
Yeah, I'm going to invoke. I'm going to go ahead and tag your enmity from mage hunters weakness. Fair enough.
So then just two?
Yeah.
Cool. Adequate.
Yeah.
Oh no, it isn't.
No.
Shit.
He didn't mean that, dear listeners. He didn't mean it.
It doesn't help when I mention that my skin is Dri Ifa.
He moves the skin derrick out of the diagram in the air and it fades. And then he points it back at you and he says, you will submit to the question, and if you resist, I will kill you. And he walks toward you.
Kian gives this face as if he's about to respond and then realizes that that question is phrased in such a way that no response is clearly necessary.
Your left wrist, he says.
I hold it up.
He lays the tip in the point of the small hollow in your wrist. And you see his eyes unfocus as he's clearly using the path of the mind, which is interesting. It feels like he's shoving the blade slowly into your arm.
Great. Has this happened before? When I was questioned before?
No, you weren't. This was not the manner of your questioning.
Lovely.
Cecile, you see he immediately breaks out in a pouring sweat. Were your actions here today designed in any way to undermine Tuhal or its great families?
No, to the contrary.
So it's common that this form of the questioning has three questions. And he's looking at your arm, and you see that the great blue vein that runs up your flesh from your wrist is sort of it has begun to sort of light up from within with your pulse. And you're beginning to feel like a pounding in your ears. Did you come here today? Into this circle to work harm to any inhabitants of this place?
Again, no, to the contrary.
Do you carry any new darkness with you? And if so, what is it?
If I, in character, don't understand the question, how do I respond to that? Because I'm bound to answer truthfully, right?
I mean, you can always try to lie under question.
No.
Please try to lie. You can just, if you genuinely don't understand, you can ask a question in return.
What?
If you do that and you're lying, though, the questioning will hurt you.
Yeah. So yeah, but I genuinely ask, what darkness?
Since you were bound and questioned, and particularly recently, have you found any great dangers to the people or the state?
Yes, as you witnessed.
You see him with an expression. His eyes sort of turn inward as he looks down at the green grass beyond the sort of luminous red pulse. And you can see now there are veins running in the skin, Derek, that are pulsing in the same kind of pulsing thud of your heartbeat.
Well, that's not good.
And you see a look of internal recrimination that you recognize as internal recrimination. Like he's silently berating himself. And then he lifts the blade from your wrist. And there's kind of a
oh God. Your colleagues had a more pleasant means of extracting the question.
Well, my colleagues didn't serve under the one of the true masters of our kind. You can see now that you're close to him, he's relatively young.
And I feel like I'm getting the sense that when he says that, that's not a boast, that this is something that's very, like, he believes this.
Yeah.
It's not coming from a place of ego.
No.
To say that. I kind of look back towards when he kind of eases off, and as the beating of blood in my ears begins to fade, I gingerly step away and kind of with a reluctant, as if like, hey, I hope this is okay, I move over to Claiborne to see how he's doing.
What do your tears look like, Claiborne?
The usual humanoid form is only barely represented here. You see a slouched, bulbous shape, like as if a crouched form, a sitting form made of bubbled water and mud. You see the silts swirling within the surface, and the face is little more than a round blob with a depression for a mouth and depressions for eye sockets. There are no ears, no other features showing. And water is pouring in rivulets from the eye sockets.
So is the clay like trying to creep back up over the skull?
Oh, it has.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the bones are not showing at this point. But an arm raises up, and to your horror, a very realistic human mouth forms in the palm of the hand and says and speaks in Claiborne's voice, "Please excuse the inconvenience. I will be with you shortly." And then the arm falls back down and the rivulets of water continue to run out of the eye sockets.
And that isn't the darkness you spoke of.
No, this is Claiborne. I, as you are probably aware, magic has become more wild and uncontrollable. And he is the result of something that has happened, but he actually, in my experience, has had a generous spirit. So
friend of children, protector of pilgrims.
He's been assisting me.
And what was he assisting in you doing here at the reflecting pool exactly?
With your permission, may I tend to him?
Yes.
And Dale, I'm kind of wondering if, do you think like if I could use the serpent to kind of maybe like bring the excess water out in a way that might be safe for you? Is that something that you feel would make sense or would be possible?
I think that's up to your character to decide what you wish to do.
Okay. I mean, I just want to make sure that you're okay with me trying to do that.
Of course.
So
that's a player to player question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you okay with me doing this?
Yeah. Okay. Kian, I think puts, first of all, you said the clay had grown over the skull, like the previously shown skull. Did the ruins show themselves to the mage hunter behind us, or did he come after?
He certainly saw the tableau, so. Because he was close enough by the time he wrote that you know, he was only steps away.
Right. So Kian kind of whispers the same charm that he has been whispering earlier, but in a calm, placid tone of voice. And he calls on the serpent to kind of, I think as he desires, the way I imagine this, if it works, would be to see the tail. Would see the tail of the serpent across Claiborne's body. And the tail kind of drags down out of Claiborne, pulling the excess moisture out and back into the water.
Cecile and Sisyphus are kind of just looking at you horrified as you do this. Sisyphus just looks a little worried. Cecile's mouth is just like open, like, what the?
Shall I roll for that?
No.
Okay.
But I'm going to say that I'm going to just consume the Serpent's Touch.
Okay.
Tag.
That sounds fair.
And can I make a one small modification?
Absolutely.
So I think there's like an impression across the clay, and it wraps and wraps and wraps as though a long sinuous serpent's tail were wrapping around Clayborn and squeezing him. And there is, although Clayborn seems unconcerned, you actually hear bones creak for a moment.
Ooh.
Inside the compression, and then all of a sudden he seems to like almost like evulse water. I think water just sort of like pours off of him, and it goes into the grass, and you can smell the brine of it as it does, and it as it hits the surface of the reflecting pool, as the Dryderig called it. It's kind of cloudy against the clear water, and you can, with no mistake, make out the seven-pointed crown of the serpent as it falls into the water. And from behind you, you hear the Dryderig go.
Kian turns around and his hands outstretched. Better here than in the city. If you have any other questions, I will answer them to the best of my ability.
What is the darkness you mentioned?
The millstone that lies below the water here.
Yes.
It's
the one that holds the airwork of Turner.
Yes. It was placed there by Turner himself. And my understanding from our investigation is that, and he kind of pauses reluctantly, it's some sort of capstone of terror.
You mean that's the capstone from when Turner locked the terrors of Maur under the earth?
Yes. And it seems that you know more about this than I do.
And you're saying it's just been laying here in the pond this whole time.
Yes.
Gosh, should have had a magician around to tell you that. Oh, well.
I think I do look around at the evidence of the teaching stones and other stuff. I think that knowledge was held once before it slipped away.
And why are you here working magic at all?
My companions and I were given a task not very well described by Cherna. What's the cub's actual name?
Agrian Kuval.
Kuval. By Cherna Agrian Kuval. One thing led to another. We were investigating an incident that led to the shutting down of the proving grounds. And it seemed linked to some sort of knotwork, which by not coincidence also is the same knotwork on that millstone.
It looks like this, and I think Cecile kind of motions. I think Sisyphus draws it perfectly. in some of the wet. I think there's a little bit of
It's there on the surface of the millstone.
Oh yeah, and he just points it out.
I mean, you could draw it too if you want. Yeah. That'd be cool.
I think there's like a little bit of soil left over from Claiborne right along the edge, and just with deft movements, he kind of traces like a perfectly symmetrical knotwork thing in the mud next to the water.
Dr. Derek furrows his already furrowed brows at that, and then gives the two slaves a second once over.
Mm-hmm. We serve him.
And
his house.
Did your torque fall off in the water somewhere?
I thought they were wearing their torques.
Were they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they were. They might not look great like on real close inspection because they retrieved them from another place and they don't fit super well.
So I think you realize Cecile's is not on him.
Aster, I regret to inform you I've lost my torque.
Well, perhaps it's around. I say, looking at is there any aftermath of the eels, or do they just become water?
They just become water.
I think Cecile points at Sisyphus. He still has his, and I go with him.
Fine.
He's surprisingly like good natured for a witch hunter.
Yeah, I kind of give him a, you know.
I get the feeling he has more important things to worry about right now.
And what on the face of Mara were those things that came out of the water?
Well, if it pleased the Master Witch Hunter, those seemed to be creatures of the serpent.
If I had to guess, and it is just a guess, I would suspect that they are some sort of protector of the millstone to prevent it being removed.
And you have either spent years as a spy perfecting your Kahal accent, or you are in fact from Kahal. Yes?
By the way, I think I probably have a pretty good Tuhal accent. Because I've been living here for 10 years.
You do. But it's probably not perfect, especially under stress.
That's fair. Yes, I am originally from Kahal. Do you know me?
I don't. But I'm wondering how someone from the Kingdom of Mountains and Mist wields the power typically claimed by the Wardens of Ternan, which is to say, the obvious power of the serpent.
The thing about an open mind is that it finds its own path. It seems it's proven useful, even here in Tuhal.
Well, you'll want my name for later. It's Kalach. And I assure you, I'll be speaking with Blade Aoife and Tiarna Cuval. And I certainly hope they know your name.
Kian winces too well.
your sake, I hope that's the case.
Hope that... I've already given her quite a bit of trouble.
If there had been people here, or those things had not been so interested in you. And he raises furry red eyebrows.
If there had been people here, then they would have been fortunate to have someone here to prevent them from being devoured as well.
Speak thanks again. For your help, by the way.
Kian of Cahal. And you're the very talkative one. What's your name?
My people call me Cecile. But the slaves really have names.
Well, most people can't count very high, so numbering you would be impractical.
True. And the quiet one is Sisyphus.
He shakes his head and kind of waves off with you.
Did he?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Did he say that he was going to talk to Dreifa, and who else was he say he was going to talk to?
Kival.
Oh, shit.
I'm giving you guys a story status of I'm gonna tell.
I say to him, it was made very clear to me by implication that although I was expendable and that's why I'm sent on this mission,
he steps past you into the cold water and kind of turns and looks back at you as you say that.
That the person behind it, discretion was important to Cherna Kival. So if you talk to him, please be discreet. In deference to his wishes.
I will make certain that there are no repercussions of your actions here today. You should go somewhere else. He walks over to the millstone, kind of peering into the water. And you can see that the cloudiness hasn't entirely left the water.
I think as I begin to move towards the shore, but then I kind of turn around. I understand that you have a great many reasons for wariness. But if you know something about this, and if your investigations confirm everything I've told you, perhaps you should seek me out. I think the threat here is very great. And regardless of what you might think, I don't actually want any harm to come to the city or to the land. I could be useful. You can find me.
If I were to have some desire to seek you out, where would I do it?
Is there an inn that would make sense for me? Oh, actually, we're in the town.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess House Fane would be a natural place to tell him, right?
Sure. You don't want to tell them about the fall down?
Well, the fall down is part of House Vane, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I tell him in House Vane, there's a fall down outside. You can probably find me there. I'm still tasked with this mission regarding the proving grounds, but I'm sure they can send word.
As he's regarding you, you can see out of the corner of your eye, it's probably just a breeze, but the water around his right leg where it's in the water stirs as though something were underneath the surface.
Be wary below you, Kian says, looking at the water.
And he looks back and the ripples dissipate as he looks back.
I turn and head off. He's a mage hunter. He can take care of himself.
Claiborne, it takes you a moment longer to pull yourself together. And as you do, you see he takes his red blade back out and kind of holding it against his own flesh, kind of holds his arm out over the millstone, and you see it sort of light up from within, and again it sort of beats with his heartbeat, which is clearly steady and slow, like dum, 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 dum. And he holds it out and he lowers it toward the water and kind of passes it over the surface of the water. And you can see that he clearly expects something to happen. And instead, just the light in the Skandera goes out. And he kind of stops, like something just slapped him. And he kind of lifts the Skandera away from his flesh, sort of turns it over, looks down at the millstone, and then looks at you with a little bit of murder in his eyes.
Yeah, we're warned.
This is going to move a little faster.
All right. Screen swipe.
Okay.
So, Kian, you're below me in the Brady Bunch. Kian, where are you heading next? Since you're driving
well, when last one we were kind of talking about avenues to talk to investigate, I think ironically the millstone seemed like, oh, that's just a thing we should check out on our way to the other things. What time of day is it now?
It's late morning.
I think I send word back to House Vane that if a Dre Derek were to come calling, I'll be in the old market, and I think I'm going to go.
Do we send word? Do we like throw a coin to like some messenger, or what's the method by which that is done?
Yeah, as a bonded wizard, you could go to like any kind of business and get an apprentice, you know, to go and deliver a message, especially if it's to a noble house. Just, it wouldn't cost you anything.
Idea hoping like they might hope for a tip for giving relevant information or something on there.
Just really or to favorite. Be noticed, probably.
Yeah.
I think Kian makes it clear to Cecile and Claiborne that since the day is still young, that he is going to talk to Darrow O'Boyne.
Are you sure you want to do that?
As opposed to?
Well, you seem to make them very mad. You sure you don't want to head towards the Tainwood? get out of town.
Well, if wishes came true, he says with a
I'm just saying
sardonic chuckle.
Pretty mad, and it sounds like you're in a lot of trouble. I'm just saying, yes. Now seems like the time to head for the hills, so to speak.
There's nowhere I can go that they can't follow.
Oh, there are.
Let me correct that. There's nowhere I can go that I'm confident I can survive that they can't follow.
This is truer.
Also.
But you have us.
I've
we can help you survive.
I've given enough of a headache to Dree Aoife. Don't tell her I said that, but I feel like this has been enough.
Fortunately for you and for me, very few things have ever really wanted to eat Sisyphus. I doubt anyone would want to eat, and he points down to Claiborne either.
Of course, the life of a bonded is precarious once the one they are bonded to befalls some sort of tragedy. So if either of you, either of the three of you, wished to try your luck somewhere else, I would not hold it against you. I would not like my fate to bring down the rest of you.
I believe our fates are intertwined.
And then my condolences.
On the walk, Claiborne, you are putting yourself back together. Mm-hmm. As you go, and you spend the last part of the walk to Newmarket pulling shards of freshwater clam shell, to all appearances, shaped interestingly like triangular teeth. Out of the clay of your face.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of looking at them, sort of dropping them in the mud of the road.
Still turns to Claiborne. So Claiborne, are you a common thing for humans to become when they die? Is that why they cremate so many of their kind?
Kian just chuckles.
Claiborne's face is far more human than it was, but still clearly not. Still covered over with a sheen of water and a stir of silt within it. And the mouth opens, and instead of his usual low bubbling voice, you hear a faint whistling whining sound that if you listen to it closely enough, you might decide it was the releasing terror of all of those drowned in seawater. And that voice forms words, and it says, "You are important, and I will follow."
Okay, I'm giving you guys an unearthly presence status tag.
Cecile just kind of nods and kind of pats Sisyphus and just mentions offhand. You know, I'm really missing the swamp about now.
The boggy ground of the neighborhood called the Old Market does show kind of like as you approach the market. Why didn't it ask me that? Sorry, John. Let me see if it sent me an email, maybe. That should get you access.
I think as we walk to the old market, Kian produces a pipe and fills it with tobacco.
As you approach the area of the new market, you can see clearly the edge of it where the ribbon, the white builder structure once ran, because there's sort of a long, shallow pond where once that infinitely reliable road ran out from the heart of the city. And now it's an unclearable 3 inches of mucky water at the edge of the neighborhood.
So that would be the old market, right? Because the builder road.
Yeah, sorry, the old market, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, did I say the new market? Yeah, well, it had to be one of those. Oh. I meant the old market, thank you. And as you approach from the distance, you can see the remnants of the old market everywhere, and most particularly in kind of the flatness of the ground with sort of semi-regular ululations of what must be stones, probably for drainage, covered by earth, that are the remnants of walls. But more interestingly, like 100 broken teeth, the remnants of rotted timbers that once held up large structures in the old market, and which have been undermined and fallen over and rotted and fallen to pieces. But it looks almost like there was a vast pier here stretching out into a lake that has become a shallow bog. And there are on the little hillocks dotted all throughout the old market, there are newer structures, timber and wattle and daub, and clay and thatch structures of various kinds. And it's easy enough to ask around after Oboyne, because Darrow is known well in the neighborhood. And he and his wife have, and you hear that there's a wife. Have what at first glance might look like a terrible property at the bottom of the old market. But you can see there are low walls of stones around a fairly large paddock. And you see evidence that leeks are thriving in the boggy ground there. And so as you come up to the structure, unlike many of the structures here, it's actually seems to be on a big, maybe a slab of stone, maybe that was a wall that fell over or something, that the house is built sort of up out of the muck. And it has It has bricks and clay intermixed, bricks and stones and clay intermixed. And it has relatively high ceilings and then a thatch roof, which is a sort of indication of well-to-do here. And it has a wooden door, which is currently closed. As you come up to the door, you hear the unmistakable sounds of a woman climaxing in sexual pleasure. And then after a long, quiet moment, you hear, "Get off me, you sweaty lump." And in response, you just hear, and then you hear a mingling of a male voice and a female voice, sort of chuckling.
How weird does Claiborne look right now?
He has entered the uncanny valley. So at glance, so that's why I gave you the tag of unearthly presence. So at a quick glance, he looks like a dirty dude.
I mean,
a really dirty dude.
Closer
glance, he looks unnervingly almost human. Like either sort of deeply deformed or.
Well, Paul,
one make the.
I'm still running with ridiculous rivulets of water.
Couldn't one make the argument that rather than unearthly presence, that he's sort of an over-earthly presence?
One could.
Okay.
How are your toxic burns doing?
They hurt.
Okay. Good. But they got splashed with pure water.
I think.
And what we know from toxic burns is that feels great.
Right. Salt water, which actually probably is good for them, but is not going to feel good at all.
I think
might be one of the reasons he keeps talking and trying to like kind of snipe at people, because it probably takes his mind off of, you know, some of his own personal injuries. Mm.
I think Kian, as he kind of reaches up to knock on the door, he stops himself and then just immediately like turns around and looks at the two of you. I don't suppose that there are things that you two want to take care of. He says his back to the door.
So kind of just looks at you. Are you embarrassed of us?
Oh, no, embarrassed isn't the word.
I will go and rest.
We go where you go, Master. But if you want us to wait outside and keep guard.
Oh, well, that's very diligent.
Master, we didn't eat super well last night, and the leeks are almost. Do you think he'd mind if we had a couple?
It is a large field, I mean.
I think I'm going to let you make that decision and not tell me about it.
Okay. Good idea. I can see we're going to get along famously.
Less that I know the next time I get put to the question, probably the better.
And as he says, the next time I get put to the question, probably the better, the door swings open behind him.
And I think I turn around just at that point to knock, and I almost hit the person in the face standing behind the door. Oh my God.
It's a large, tattooed, burly, and he has what they call a barley body or an oat body, where he's like a big man, but he's not like ripped like a modern model. He's just sort of big all over. Nothing is hanging, but he's just sort of, he looks a little flabby.
Is he like barrel chested?
He's barrel chested and barrel bellied and, you know, barrel armed, barrel shouldered. He's got his head kind of shaved down both sides, and there's complicated knotwork tattoos that run from like the middle of his forehead and then back down and disappear under his, or just disappear behind him. And then he's got like a big wreath of knotwork and a woman's face tattooed in brightly colored inks over his heart.
He's made of ham hocks.
He's made of ham hocks. He's wearing a very nice clan boyne tartan kilt. And it's like a day kilt, so it doesn't have the big frumpy thing that traveling kilts do. But he's bare chested. And he kind of rears back a little bit in his bull neck and kind of looks you up and down and kind of looks the Sorin up and down. All right, well, this is bound to be certainly more interesting than the lay back and do nothing sexual progress of my wife. But be sure and tell the guests I haven't met yet, but already hate, that they're welcome to come in and have some honey cakes. Invite strange men into your house, woman? Are you some kind of whore? No, I don't get paid for it. Oh, you get plenty paid. You call that payment? he obviously like, huh? Like he just can't, he just isn't quite like, oh, stunned, can't come back. And then he says, well, come in then. Not the big one.
Yeah. We'll stay outside.
I nod apologetically.
He holds out a hand, and you see he's got a couple of big, gold wristbands clamped onto his arm.
Do they look similar to the coming of age bracelets that Bin O'Dare
no.
had? Mm-mm. They're different.
Okay. Yeah.
I clasp his hand.
Okay. It would actually be like a, you know, like a forearm.
Right. Yeah.
As you do that and he kind of shakes up and down, and being closer, you can see that in part his chest and shoulder tattoos may be there to hide the many scars that crisscross his upper body. He kind of shakes your hand and just sort of practically like lifts you off your feet, but in a sort of like just sort of like levers you into the house, and sort of like lets you go, and then sort of kind of looks at the two Sorin and goes, well, I can take the little one if you want. Oh, you're the brains of the operation, right? He says to Cecile.
Matthew, you're muted.
He responds, yeah, that's right. And then from Sisyphus, you hear a little from below.
My opinion, exactly. And I don't even know exactly what you said.
I kind of shrug my shoulders.
He reaches out his hands for the child-sized Cecile.
So I think Cecile kind of like moves back a little bit. But Sisyphus, a little peaked, just sort of like bends his head so that he's within range and he can kind of just pluck him off of his back.
Yeah, I think he does.
And as that happens, he kind of just looks back at Cecile like, Why?
Yeah, he kind of lifts you off gingerly and then just sort of like turns you into the crook of his arm. So you're facing out.
Right.
And then turns and you can see there's a large strapping volume of a woman, obviously like straightening up there. It's the inside of the dun is one large room, as is typical.
So and these are both big people.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and she's like throwing furs and things, and obviously putting their bed back in order. And she's also just wearing an Oboyne kilt and nothing up top. She's wearing a gold torque, however, kind of marked with many designs. And there's a like if you took a gold necklace and wove it into a braid. So her kind of dark and nondescript brown hair is sort of run through with crisscrossings of gold. There's a table and he, well, brains, table or fireplace?
Table, please.
All right. And he kind of strides over and grabs a skin of something off a smaller table and sort of like leans you out so you can kind of maneuver yourself into a chair and then let's go.
Thank you.
And pops a skin. Mediocre mead. Please, and he gestures for you to have a seat. So are you it about my wife's tits, or is it about me you've come? And at the mention, she turns and sort of displays her large, ample breasts as if for you to reconsider.
In a cheerfully kind of somewhat jovial tone of voice, Kian says, came for one, but could stay for the other.
Hey, wait a minute. And he sort of scowls at you and looks at her, and she says, "No, you like him." Oh, right. And he turns and smiles, a sort of gap-toothed smile. He's missing several teeth. A couple of them have been replaced with gold replacements.
Nice. as you probably guessed, I'm here for you, or at least to talk to you.
You don't look like the usual kind, he says.
Oh, what is the usual kind?
Here you go. He tosses some very fine looking brown bread on the table and puts a porcelain bowl of salt next to it. I know it's going out of fashion, but why don't we break bread together? Will you join us, wife? Well, if you're going to call me wife, I'm certainly not going to join you. I'm going to go out and, you know, work up a sweat worth having. And she disappears through a side door.
Oh, and
he slaps one of his beefy legs and chuckles.
Damn.
That thing is my wife, Tara. And obviously, I'm Dara Boyne. And you?
I'm Kian Gallagher, and this is bonded to me is Cecile.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's not Brains, then.
Well, you can call him Brains if you like. I kind of look over at Cecile and...
Cecile just sort of shrugs, like, I've had worse.
I have you drink bread and salt and the hospitality of my home. And he rips the bread into pieces and plops down and takes a piece and shows it to you, squirts some of the meat onto it, dips it in the salt, and
yeah, and with a kind of purposefulness that acknowledges that Kian also, on a very deep level, like understands and appreciates the offer of hospitality. Mm-hmm. He takes the mead and does and the bread, and he takes a piece and eats a piece of it kind of in a like a small enough piece just to kind of accept it, but does so also to indicate to Cecile that, like, okay, I've eaten, so you can go ahead and have as much as you want, because Cecile was hungry.
So he also takes a part and tries to imitate Keegan as much as he can. And there's actually like a moment of like surprise and kind of a pleasurable sound as he like puts it in his mouth. Like it sounds a little bit like it's better than he thought it would be. He probably hasn't eaten that well since he's been in human lands.
Thank you for the hospitality, Darrow.
You're very welcome. He reaches over. There's a couple of kind of double tine forks and some little dirks and stuff on the table. And he sort of reaches past them. And there's a big tortoise shell, and he lifts it up and he rummages around and pulls out three horns, and kind of slides one to each of you and takes one and picks up the skin and squeezes meat into the horn and kind of sloshes it around. Oh, they're clean.
I take a...
He runs a hand through his kind of dirty beard.
I imagine you... I take a sip. I imagine you have a lot more free time on your hands.
Because I'm older now and there's only so much time I can lay atop my wife. She said something to you.
No.
He says, he says, grinning somewhat malevolently at you.
Kian genuinely laughs and says, no, I mean the proven grounds being shut down and all.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, these things, it's not something you can do every day, if you got my meaning. So this would be my downtime anyway.
Ah, well.
Meanwhile, outside, I don't recall inviting monsters into my field. So you must not be monsters.
There's a little sort of agreement.
And yes, you can go ahead and finish that. You can go ahead and eat that leek in your hand and swallow the three in your mouth. And if you want the ones that are slightly more ripe, they're down there. Well, I will say you're not going to win any friends with the contents of this meal. And you, sir, look a bit... Oh. Is everything all right? She says to Claiborne, who's kind of just been maybe... What has he been doing?
Well, he was ejecting huge amounts of seawater before. Since he is standing in her garden being a water feature, he is not going to destroy her garden by adding salt to it.
Okay. And so
he has been standing like a statue and weeping copiously, pure water. So he looks like he might actually be a new statue until he turns his head to respond to her.
I apologize for the added moisture.
She reaches down and pulls the loop of her kilt up and over as a kind of half shirt, sort of girding her breasts, you know, just in case.
Okay.
I can direct it usefully if you wish.
Sure.
These over here could use more.
And he stretches his arms out and rain just falls from his hands
onto
some flowers.
She has a not inconsiderable mixed like herb garden, on the slightly drier patch of land next to the house.
I will avoid the rosemary. I know it rots at the roots if it has too much.
That's quite a thing to know. I'm called Tara. And you?
Taurus, it is an honor to make your acquaintance. You are a most formidable human.
You hear Sisyphus.
A translation?
You have great breasts.
Oh, well, true.
I know that this is, in some parts of society, a sign of great value. My name is Claiborne.
Sisyphus kind of like raises his hand.
That is Sisyphus.
He nods.
I see. And does he belong to you?
No, he belongs to himself, but he is following Kian, who is inside at the moment, talking to your great sweaty lump.
I'm going to tell him about that later. A Surin that belongs to themselves.
Yeah, Sisyphus is making like the little like cutting throat gesture in the back.
That's probably something you don't want getting around.
I apologize if I have misunderstood.
It looks like you haven't, but perhaps trusted too quickly to a stranger. After all, I could be a salacious whore of some kind.
It would be my honor to meet a salacious whore, as I have never met one.
Well then, well met and welcome to my garden. I don't mean to be indelicate, but are you really, really dirty, or are you a Joe Klebo? I get it now. I'm a little slow on the uptake sometimes.
I am of the earth.
How's that?
It was difficult today. I had to accept a large amount of water and terror into myself, and am purging those now. Thank you for not attacking me.
Well, you're quite welcome.
I know that you humans can sometimes use salt. I can provide you with perfectly pure salt, if that would be useful to you.
Yes, salt's quite valuable. You might want to save it for yourself.
I do not have need of valuables. Please hold out your hands.
You two are very clearly not from around here, she says, holding out her large hands.
One of his hands stops raining, comes and hovers over hers, actually touches hers with a cool damp of clay. And when his hand lifts away, her palms are full of pure white salt.
Well, praise to The earth. Thanks. She sort of hunts around and turns over a little bowl and with her elbow and pours the salt into it. Oh. I thought it would taste of the... You're a clay person of your words. Meanwhile, back inside. So all of us take turns, you know, in and out. And this would have been my time anyway.
How long does that usually last?
Well, it depends. I had a small injury to my left hip from a fall last month, so I'd probably be grousing around to get back to work next week or so.
Do you...
Did Klee send you? I thought we didn't have anything to fight right now.
We don't. Actually, I've been tasked with looking into what would be required to get it opened again. Unfortunately, Cleon's gone missing as well. Did you hear about that?
Klee's gone missing. No, I didn't. Heard about that.
What was the last you heard?
Well, I heard some rumble about them not being prepared on opening day for this short series. But that was all I heard.
You know, there were two spinners.
Ben's a good one for bringing monsters back for the fight.
You know what
He's
happened?
He's not one of those ones who'll promise you an avi and show up with a wolfen who's been tarred and feathered. You laugh. I've actually seen that.
He still looks a little ill.
So
the poor wolfen honestly looked more like a pigeon than anything.
Can't have been very good sport.
No.
Hey, I seem to be having trouble hearing people. It seems like it's me because none of you are having issues.
No, I can hear everybody fine.
Yeah, I can as well.
How's my audio, gents?
It's good.
It's been great.
Yeah, it's all right.
I think that it's definitely on my end.
Can you turn up the output volume for your headset?
No. It's not that. Like it's lagging. Like the video's lagging, and your voice is cutting in and out.
So I
might need to reset my router or something.
No, I haven't had that problem.
If it persists, I'll do that. Anyways, yeah. So I didn't hear your response when I said that doesn't sound very sporting.
It wasn't.
I can imagine. Was that at the Proving Grounds, or was that somewhere else?
No, that was here at the Proving Grounds.
Must have been a while ago.
Yeah, it was maybe about, I don't know, 4 years back. There were some chappies from up north we had that were trying to bring a new kind of entertainment. It didn't take.
Ah, probably for the better. How long has Ben been there?
Oh, maybe that long. 4 years, something like that.
What do you think about Ben? Kian asks with kind of leaning forward a little conspiratorially.
I mean, the crowds like him, and so he's a bit flash, and he can take a crack upside the head, but he's a bit of an arse.
You're not the first person to tell me that.
Can I ask why you're speaking of him in terms of the past?
Well, he's been missing too.
Cleon Rua and Ben O'Dare have gone missing together.
Two others. Donald and Bandon Alou.
Was it a traveling circus of gold headed for a lay that I didn't hear about?
Well, that would be a convenient explanation. I wish it were so. It'd make my job a lot easier.
I mean, what, did the spinners eat them or something?
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
I mean, not that they eat people, but you know what I mean.
The spinners are also missing.
The spinners are missing.
Well, that's the reason why they closed it to begin with, right?
Well, I figured the spinners just died. They do that sometimes.
Oh. No, when
they're taken from the woods.
As we're kind of having this conversation, I want to be doing, maybe this sounds like an investigation role, and I want to see if there's any guile in how he's talking to me. Or maybe more specifically, does he seem to have any anxiety about the line of questioning, or does his surprise to the things seem genuine? Those are the kinds of things I'm curious about.
Okay, what are you tapping?
I'm going to tap my espionage and perceptive. Okay. And likable. I think likable also applies here.
Okay.
So those three tags.
What's the weakness for your spy pillar?
I think I actually didn't write one down.
Oh, I mean, you've no weaknesses, have you?
You get one no matter what. You only get a second one if you have four, is that correct?
That's what I remember.
Yeah, you always have a weakness.
Oh, I think I forgot to finish that. I apologize. What would be a good weakness for?
For Cahal Tradecraft.
To all.
Crafty son of a bitch.
I tell you what. Since it's on me for forgetting that, why don't we just say that you're tapping a weakness and I'll fill it in later.
Okay.
So I'll roll 2d6 plus 2. 10.
Okay.
Nice.
Okay, so your two questions were?
Question one, does his surprise so far, like at the moments where he has expressed surprise, seem genuine?
Yeah.
And then two, has there been any guile in any of the things that he's been telling me, or has he been trying to be misleading in any way?
He's clearly moderating his opinions, but that's the only way it seems like he's been lying or been in any way less than truthful.
And also quick question about hospitality. Is there anything about honesty in hospitality, or is it just safety? Okay, just curious.
There is a saying in the Five Kingdoms. Only a lazy man tells only the truth.
Right. Kian takes a big draught from his horn, and then, as if kind of making a decision to himself, looks back at Darrow in the eyes. Bin's dead.
Well, at first you looking at me like that, I thought you were going to ask to stay the night.
Yeah.
Bin O'Dare is dead. Not just missing. How do you know that?
We found his body.
And he seemed a little pissed. You found his body. Where did you find his body, and who killed Bin O'Dare?
And as he says, who killed Bin O'Dare, Kian doesn't respond verbally, but kind of tilts his eyebrow as if to, like, you see why I've been asking these questions. And then looks over at Cecile. Where did we find them?
In the, what's it called? Are these charnel pits, or?
Yeah.
In the charnel pits.
The charnel pits, where?
At the, at the proving grounds. And I found this. I think he reaches in and he pulls out the silver bracelet and then puts it on the table. So it's easy to see, but would require him to actually, like, really get up out of his chair and reach for it if he wanted to grab it.
Are you telling me that's Bin O'Dare's?
I kind of glance at him.
He waves one meaty hand for you to hand it over.
Luckily, he kind of slides it over.
I would have expected it to be familiar. My understanding is he wore it all the time.
He picks it up. Why is it so clean?
The lie. And I think he just shows him where there's a couple of the caustic burns on his arm.
Hang on. Whose lie? And then you show him the burns.
Yeah.
And he'd bend down. Oh. Ugh. You went down and clink. It makes it has the ring of pure silver as it hits as he drops it onto the table. And then he uses kind of the gnarly nail of one pinky to just slide it back across the table toward you. Oh, he takes a big swig from his horn and looks at it like, how did the horn get empty? Just
You'll forgive me for being a little circumspect, because the reason I'm talking to you, trying to find those who didn't have a pleasant relationship with Bin O'Dare, and you were the first name that came up. But I don't think you're lying to me.
I mean, I've certainly cracked his head several times, as he's wrung mine. I didn't like him, but not to make something of it.
Do you know somebody who might?
Donald.
Can you tell me about that?
You know, Cleon Rua was the fight monger, right?
Right.
He'd never scheduled Donald and Bin in a fight together, because one would probably end up really hurting the other. You don't look like a man who visits the proving grounds often. By which I mean, We fight, but we try to spare the viscera of each other.
Right.
Because otherwise there'd be nobody left to fight.
I can think of other reasons too, but sure.
There's word that there's bad blood with both of the Lus. Of course, we weren't particularly close either, but that's just clan reasons. There's word that one of the women that Ben had on the side, Donald made a point of wooing her away. Just to piss him off. I think there was something about her then screaming Donald's name during a fight and throwing flowers to him or something. And oh yeah, that's right. But I mean, Clee and Bandon, you know, work together to organize the fights and recruit and things. And neither of them particularly liked Ben either. He was, don't tell anybody, but you know, some of the fights are a bit rehearsed. And Ben was one of those ones that wouldn't always follow the direction of the play, as it were. Mm. Especially if it featured him not winning. Mm. You know, come to think of it, I haven't seen Donald in a couple of weeks. And I usually see him down at the public house. He lives here in the market.
We were going to speak to his family or wife, if he had one. It sounds like this woman might be a good person to talk to. Do you know who she is or where we could find her?
She had a pretty name. I don't know. Tara! The back door slams open and she comes in with a couple of bags, obviously, you know, hand-woven bags full of freshly picked vegetables and a bowl of the cleanest, whitest, sparkliest salt you've ever laid eyes on. you bellowed for me, husband. I was just out in the garden doing nothing as I do. Well, and don't I know that, and isn't that why I had to bellow for you? Because you were lollygagging outside when we have guests. You're right, husband. These vegetables must have fallen out of the sky into these sacks. What can I do for you, my sweet dear? Well, if you're not going to take that tongue back to Allay and cut all the grass so we can plant again in the old country, then perhaps you could tell me the name of that tart. What was the source of the... with Donald and... Oh, well, it was Chiara. She works at the tanners. Do you not remember? The whole thing was about that flag that she had. Well, I thought it was flowers. No, a flag. And it was painted with a flower. How many times have you hit your head, husband? He just kind of clears his head, doesn't say anything.
Did we actually get offered the honey cakes that were mentioned earlier?
The aforementioned honey cakes have yet to appear.
Okay.
Then nothing to compliment. but I look up at I don't suppose you could.
The brown bread is quite good.
I kind of nod my head gratefully for the bread. Mm-hmm. Seems you have a fine memory. Could you tell me more about what happened with Kiara? What is that all about?
Oh, how long have you got? And did you bring any beer? Because it would enhance the telling. She says, pay no attention to my scheming wife. She'll take any excuse to wag her tongue. Not for you tonight, husband, she says, dropping the vegetables onto a preparation table.
Damn.
Well, isn't that a fine reward for not being my wife's mental equal? It's fine that you've admitted it at last. Now we can set things right in the household. Queen Tara, you can call me from now on. I don't think I will. I didn't think you would. We have some very pleasant monsters in the garden. Would you like me to invite them in? No. That's the wrong answer, darling. I mean, yes, obviously, invite the sweet monsters from the garden into the house, because why wouldn't we want monsters in the house? Listen, you entertain the monsters and make something that we'll call a meal out of generosity. And I'm going to stomp over and check in on Donald. Because not that I don't trust you, my friend, but you're bonded and you're a wizard and, well. So, I apologize for leaving you in the to the untender lashings of a woman's tongue. I'm going to just stop there. He gets up and stomps toward the door. Shirt, she says. Oh, he goes back, grabs her. Shoes. Oh. He stops and puts on some wooden sandals. Anything else, wife? Get some beer on your way back, you useless lump. Of course, Queen Tara. And I'll make sure it's almost not poisoned. And he stumps out. And so, I'm gonna have Cecile make an investigation roll for Dara.
Okay.
How do I kill a dree that's in my house?
What if I've already given him hospitality?
So I'm wondering how much of that I should do. I can do the Earth Speaks.
But I just make a roll for him.
Okay. Because I also have the words hide, thoughts don't, but I don't think I can do that.
If you have some subtle magic that you could use on his behalf, but I don't.
Right. The thing is, I think it's super powerful. It's not subtle. So it'd be the kind of thing that you'd want probably permission or somebody to be under your power kind of thing for.
For Cecile to be like, I should probably get permission before doing this. The answer is definitely yes.
Okay. And so as a setup for next time then, given what you rolled, would you like Darrow's investigation to expose you to danger to get incomplete or possibly partially false information or for somebody you don't want to find something out about you?
The last one.
Okay. And and I think that brings our session for the evening to a close, as it's our closing hour, just up exactly.
Awesome.
And so we'll...
I was so looking forward to the story about Kira, but we'll see. I suspect that Tara is an excellent storyteller.
I expect there's a great deal of prurient detail.
I think commentary.
during it,
where we're like, for every one word of story, there's like four or five words of like commentary and like social, like, and this is the moral of the story, like, don't do what.
I think more it's like, well, in order to tell you this story about Kiara and Donal, I need to tell you about Kiara's sister first, who was originally dating the whore, and then the scandalous wag. Then what you need to know about Donal is that his previous girlfriend, you mean his wife? No, not his wife, his previous girlfriend, what she was up to was, and so it's like the slow filling in of a complex woven pattern before you can hold it up and see the whole thing. Is how Tara spins a yarn. And it's quite lovely in the final reveal, but you probably end up knowing way too much about a lot of people you will never meet. Kind of embarrassed if you do.
Yes, but isn't that like the main source of like entertainment in just about any like small close-knit society?
Absolutely, but yeah. But this kind of like overly intimate gossip, complex gossipy nonsense. Mm-hmm. On some level, you're just like, what is wrong with you people? And why do you all hate each other so much? Oh no, I love her. She's grand. But you just said, well, she is a hopeless tars. She's also a deer.
See, Sil already kind of thinks this of most humans already. And so this would just kind of confirm all of his implicit biases.
Exactly. In no way are you disabused from those totally reasonable biases. So let's geek out during the credits. So shout out your compatriots for good moments of storytelling or moments of ingenuity or moments of fun or things you enjoyed this session.
Okay, so first off, Paul, I think the couple were just a lot of fun to listen
to. Yeah, they were
fantastic.
That was enjoyable.
That was fantastic. Definitely among my favorite NPCs so far.
And then I really loved, like, Claiborne just, like, producing salt. Being like, all right, well, you know, I have all the component parts in my body, so I'm just going to separate those. And that would be interesting to see come around again, because that was actually like a hugely powerful superpower if you can absorb things and break them down into their component parts, because that's still hard using like modern tech. So that would be interesting to see more of that.
Yeah. And yes, that has been on his character sheet all along.
Okay.
Not Cecile, but Matthew, the player, wants to turn Claiborne into a desalinization plant.
Or an aluminum plant.
Right. You can do a lot more with aluminum.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody would be like, what is this witchcraft? This stuff is amazing.
Yeah. It's like gold, only lighter.
Yeah. Yeah. And it doesn't tarnish, and it's shiny.
I also really loved Claiborne's... battle with the eels, how he didn't attack it, he just sort of absorbed it or took in the eel. That felt like a very Claiborne thing to do and very useful. And one of the things that I've really, really enjoyed just in general about Claiborne, and this has been true pretty much every session, is that like there's a certain persistence in the way you play the character where like the facts linger and then they manifest in ways that are like useful later. And I love that because it not just is really interesting about the character, but it also makes the world feel more immersive and real.
Right.
Because it's like all these things are happening and then like, you know, there's still consequences that linger and that you can still kind of manipulate. Like, I love that. That's been a lot of fun.
Awesome. I also like just the level of like stress that you bring to Keegan and all of his relationships, both with the party and outside, and just how real you make those, John, where you could just kind of see him like sort of like crouching down a little bit and almost like cowering and just being like, what now? Like this poor dream wizard who for 10 years has kind of just been like getting by, and all of a sudden the universe has just taken a supreme interest, and you just play that very well where he's, aww, what now? Please just stop.
I feel like there's a bit of a kinship between Kian and Tyr the Unwary Eye from Fire and Heavendale. Do you remember like the opening where like there was the bodies in the courtyard and all of that nonsense? Just to feel, yeah. That's a common recurring thing, I think, that happens in poor mm-hmm. games. I loved also how Cecile and Sisyphus, like I've really enjoyed their relationship, the two of them, so mm. far. And I feel like in this session, it was especially getting, like it was becoming more and more, it feels like, oh, they're two, yes, they are kind of symbiotic, but they're right. also two different people with their own mm-hmm. different motivations and different kind of things that they care about. And mm-hmm. and I've enjoyed the, like, the duality of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've liked that a lot.
Yes, I've been enjoying, I've been watching, Matthew, the way you are carefully choosing moments to show that relationship. You're looking for ways in the story to bring out that spark and mm-hmm. that story, bring it up within the story. Really beautiful work. And Kian is also, I agree with what Matthew said about Kian's sort of desperation leaking out like sweat on a brow is just beautifully rendered.
I think
really well done.
They say good stories come from like pain, and I think you, John, just kind of radiate like the sort of inner pain of Keegan, and it's endearing because you're kind of like, even when you see like him get things, like you kind of feel like he just probably doesn't deserve all that. And it's like, I hope things work out well for that poor little wizard, because I feel like things just have not in the past. He deserves a break.
Aww. Alrighty, so does any of that feel like it has become a point of hurt or a point of help toward another character from your character? Did anybody feel saved in the fight or screwed in the fight?
So John, towards the end, you got Cecile out of the swallowed effect, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So I think that would be a help point.
Absolutely. So go ahead and mark that.
Yeah. And by absorbing one of the two attackers, I think Claiborne greatly shortened the fight for everyone else. So that might be seen as helping. And I think I may have, I just told a very gossipy woman that, at least one, the great lizard beast is an escaped slave. That could be a hurt point in the
future.
That's
definitely a hurt point. Yeah, straight up. Yeah, so I think Keegan gets a help point, and I think Claiborne should get a hurt point
uh-huh.
on Sisyphus. I'll sure.
go there.
Seal and Sisyphus help or hurt anyone in particular? There was some general fighting, but I don't know that they...
I think you tried to help Claiborne when you threw the stone, even though it wasn't effective.
Oh, yeah, like, and you were telling him to watch out.
That's so true.
Claiborne. Yeah, you were okay. trying to protect him, yeah.
Could take a help for Sisyphus.
Okay.
If you want, Dale.
Yeah.
So I'm always a little confused as to like
wait, the directionality. Wait, so he takes that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Claiborne gets a one help point versus heal.
Gotcha. Okay. So I probably didn't get any help points or hurt points this time.
I think you definitely would have gotten something. What I was about to say is like...
So Cecile, I think you would take a hurt point toward Claiborne.
Okay. Oh, because he hurt me, so I get like a point in the future
yeah.
for him?
Yeah, he
okay.
did something to kind of screw you over. So you would take a hurt point toward him for mm-hmm. that.
And do so I then, just take one hurt and one... Or help?
You get one help hurt point per session.
Okay.
So you we talked about a help for Kian. So I think you can choose a help point toward Kian or a hurt point toward Claiborne. The hurt toward Claiborne seems a little more juicy.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah. Okay. And Kian, do you have any?
Yeah. So that's what I was confused about the directionality. Does it make sense for me to take a help point towards Cecile?
Why did he generate positivity in you toward him?
So that's okay. So that answers my question. Right. I think I liked the fact that when this is kind of a repeat of before, but when Kian was like, "Hey, it's bad for slaves. If the master dies,
yeah.
you don't have to be here." But Cecile decided to come in and sit by him at the table with Darrow.
Hmm.
I felt like there was kind of I felt like that reflected
with some coaxing from Sisyphus.
Sure, but I felt like that reflected a more of a intentionality of the two of them, like becoming closer rather than you know just kind of working.
He also did kind of follow your lead and was trying to kind of build up.
Yeah. Yeah. There was definitely a lot of things Cecile could have said that could have made that interaction more awkward. And
right.
That he didn't. I think that he chose not to.
He so, was choosing to yeah, be the I'll, obedient I'll servant that, and try to. Makes,
if that's okay with you, Paul.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now I've got one hurt point and one help point towards Cecile.
Nice. It's always good when you get to choose. Mm-hmm.
Can you do both of them in the same action?
You could. I guess.
It would be a little attentions.
Wacky. No, you can only get one attention anywhere per session. So, okay. Dale, you can unburn the tag.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also wanted to mention something, John. When you were faced with that Inquisition, I think a more unwise player, the sort of people. Well, I've played with these people before. Would actually have chosen to. Stand their ground and bluster through it.
Oh, right.
And I thought it was wise and beautiful that you chose not to do that. Mm-hmm. The path you chose was infinitely more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, thank you so
really
much.
Really cool. Yeah.
I feel like that's a part of Kian's actually his personality is actually one of the reasons why he has survived as long as he has is he knows when to just be like, yeah, he doesn't have an ego. In the way I think a lot of Dree do.
Mm.
But I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's good to not have too much ego in Turnin when you're a magic user.
Right.
Tuhal. Yes.
Oh, Tuhal. Sorry.
Yes. Exactly.
And I think he, in keeping with what we were saying before, has had so many horrible things happen. He's like, sure, it's another fucked up, terrible thing that's going to happen. Why not? Like,
why not? How much worse could it be than my ongoing status?
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us for session 4 of A Marriage of Serpents, and we'll see you next time.